This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and for readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I'm so happy today that I have two guests on. At the bottom of the hour, I'm going to have a local writer, Laura Joyce Moriarty. And she's going to be talking about her fantastic books. And as a matter of fact, I read one of them, the first in the series, last night, and I was up half the night reading it, and it's really fantastic. So I'm looking forward to talking to her. But first, we're going to go to something that one of my listeners brought to my attention, and I had not known about this event, and so I was very happy that Rita Moreau, one of my favorite authors, who wrote Feisty Nuns and is a fantastic writer herself, told me about Jennifer Blanchard. And Jennifer has a lot of things that she can share with us. Hi, Jennifer, are you there?
I am, hi.
Okay, Jen. Well, you know, Rita told me that she follows you along, and so she was very excited about your program that's called Story Engineering, a discussion event that you're holding. And I know today is day two, so maybe you can catch us up and my listeners could catch up and join this group.
Absolutely. So Story Engineering is actually a book written by Larry Brooks, and it's my all-time favorite craft book. It's a bestseller. It's changed my life in so many ways. And the cool part was that I actually met Larry online in 2009 before this book even came out, and I actually found it as an ebook. So this was before Writer's Digest had even picked it up. I actually like to read the book once a year, and so this year I invited my readers to, and also actually Larry's readers and, you know, anyone else who wanted to participate, I invited them to join me to read the book, and each day I'm doing a live stream discussion. So today is actually the very first live stream discussion. And yesterday, we officially started reading the first two sections of the book. So there's not much to catch up on. You're actually perfect timing. And
Okay, so the methodology for this is that everyone will read along with you, and every day, every day, right, through the 9th, you will get together and talk.
Exactly. So there's a reading assignment each day, and then each day there's also a live stream. So today's the first one because obviously yesterday we just started the reading, so there wasn't anything to talk about yet. But each day we're doing a live stream at 1 p.m. Eastern, which basically we're discussing the stuff we read from the day before. So everything will go until the 9th, and then the 9th kicks off with we're actually doing which I haven't even announced to my people yet, but we're doing a live call with Larry and me, which is going to be really cool to talk about the book, and people can ask him questions, and, you know, it's going to be really cool. A little way to wrap up the event. So,
okay, people can find you today at 1 p.m. on your Facebook page, right?
Yes, and if they want to get all of the information about the event, including all the links to my Facebook page, the schedule of what to read and when and all that, they can go to jenniferblanchard.net/story-engineering, and all of that information is listed there for them.
Okay, well, I think this is a fun little project that you've taken on. Have you done this before?
I haven't. I've done a lot of different, like, live events and things like that, but this is the first time I just thought, you know, oh, I should invite people to, you know, read this with me, because it's definitely a book that I preach everybody should read, especially if you want to write novels. You definitely should read this book, and so I felt like, well, if I made an event around it, then more people would read it and get the information that I got that changed my writing life, and really the reason I even have a published novel is because of this book and this author. So,
well, for anyone who doesn't know, Larry Brooks, of course, is himself, he's written quite a few best-selling psychological thrillers. And then in the realm of writing about writing, he has been very successful, first with Story Engineering and then, of course, Story Fix, which was back, I think, in 2015, and it was very, very well-received book on how to transform your novel from broken to brilliant. He also has done some writing on for script writers. And since I'm a script writer, I've been aware of his writing for quite a few years. And you were right. He's an excellent teacher. He has a lot of very fine points to bring to your listeners and your people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I teach, I'm a story coach, and I teach what I learned from him because it's the only stuff that ever made craft make sense to me, and it made it clear enough for me to understand how to use it in my own stories, which I think a lot of books kind of fall short when it comes to that. So, you know, for me, it's the go-to for anyone who wants to write a novel, and especially if they want to actually get published.
Well, you've written quite a few books yourself on writing and how to sell books. You've mentioned that you are a 2 times best-selling author on Amazon. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep. I've had 2 of my books hit number one several times, actually, on Amazon.
Okay. Well, how did you manage that? What's the process for writers to get to that point? Do you have any idea of the numbers that you have to sell in order to reach that point?
Well, to be honest, it depends on the category, because each category has its own number of, this is how many books the top person sells, this is how many books you have to sell to hit the top 10 and the top 20. So something that I would recommend if you're looking to get on the top of Amazon is it's a software that's called Bestseller Ranking Pro, and basically gives you information about how many books people in each category sell, how many you'd have to sell each month in order to hit number one or to be in the top 10 or the top 20. That really gave me such a clear idea of like what it was really going to take to get on the top of Amazon. And the funny thing was that information was really useful, but it wasn't even like, just knowing that that was possible helped me to believe it was possible. And then from there, it just sort of happened when I released my next book. And like, yeah, I have a following. I've been doing this for a long time now, so it's a little bit easier when you've kind of already got that going on. But it hadn't happened up to this point until I finally got that software and learned, okay, there, you only have to sell, you know, let's say 500 to 1,000 books for certain categories in order to hit number one. So it felt believable that I could do it. And once you believe something's possible, then, you know, making it happen pretty much is the next step. So for me, it was a belief thing. It was just getting to that point where I could believe that it would be possible for me to do it.
So your book, The Best-Selling Author Mindset Formula, which is very has a very nice cover. I like the cover. How to Think Your Way to Number One. Do you share that information with the reader in that book on how to approach Amazon?
Yeah. So the thing about that book, and that's actually a freebie book that I have on my website if anyone wanted to check it out, I created that based on the idea of most of what you need to be successful as a writer, as an author, and in anything really is a mindset thing. So it all comes down to what you believe is possible and really the things you tell yourself every single day about where you want to go, how you're going to get there. And really for me, that was the number one thing that changed everything for me. So this year I wrote 9 books. I published 7 of them, nonfiction books. And that was the biggest factor for me was mindset. It was just getting your mind in a place where you can believe that you can create the success that you want, that you can actually have it. So it doesn't talk about the marketing specifics. If you want more of that, I would say check out my blog because I start sharing that stuff there. But it's really about mindset. And I feel like for writers especially, mindset is the missing key for most of them, and especially like authors. And so I see so many writers saying things like, oh, you know, it's so hard to get on Amazon. It's so hard. Or, you know, selling books is so hard. And yeah, it is if you say it is. So that's the whole thing I like to point out to writers especially is like we've been programmed by an industry that tells us that you can't make it as a writer and it's so hard and making money off your writing is so hard. But there are people out there doing it. So it's really not about what one person believes or what an industry believes. It's about what you believe. And so that's really what that book is about. It's about showing you how to reprogram your mind to think the way you need to think in order to create the success that you want. And yes, you actually have to take action. You can't just program your mind to believe something and then not do anything. But what happens is when you believe something is possible, like, oh, you believe you can hit number one on Amazon, you're much more likely to take the actions that you're going to have to take to get there. Whereas if you don't believe it's possible, you're not even going to bother. You're not going to learn what you have to do. You're not going to do it consistently because you don't believe it's possible. And so that's really what that book is about, is just how to get your mind in the game of success.
And that book is free on your website.
It is.
Which is JenniferBlanchard.net. And so that's very nice that you put that out there. And as I noticed, your blog is also very informative.
Thank you. Yeah, I worked really hard. I've been blogging since 2008. So it's been a journey for me. And I've shared pretty much everything I've been through along the way. So I sort of like to say that I teach from the trenches. So I sort of am out there as an author doing, you know, my thing and creating the success that I want and then helping other people to do it by teaching through what I've experienced.
Well, how important has blogging been to capture your readers?
Well, for me, that was all I had at first. So I didn't have any books out or anything in 2008. I was just sort of starting out as finally taking seriously this dream I had to be a published author. So blogging was that thing that really connected me to an audience and that helped me to teach people what I've been learning, share my journey. So for me, it was the starting point. I don't think that every author has to blog, but I think if you're a writer, it's pretty much a good thing to do if you can. But when you're first starting out, if you don't have an audience, your best bet isn't to really write on your own site. It's to write on other people's. So like guest posting, finding bigger name sites that have an audience that either the audience you want to get in front of or, you know, a similar audience, and then writing for them. So that way you can build your authority and your readership and your credibility on someone else's site and then drive them back to yourself.
And now for you, is Facebook also a very important tool?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. Because for me, my target audience and the people who mostly read my books, mostly hire me as a coach, are 45 plus. So people who, you know, are either finally ready to take their writing dream seriously or they're retiring soon and they're sort of getting ready to start that next chapter in their life. And so they're all on Facebook, or a lot of them are on Facebook. And so for me, it just happens to be the best social media platform. I run a Facebook group, free, and then I also have, obviously, a Facebook page where I do live streams and just share everything that I know about being an author.
So this is right up your alley, doing this kind of a discussion event.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
When you decided to select, well, you know, I love Larry's advice, and I found it's very useful. What are the highlights to you of his advice?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I would say the highlights for me are the fact that, number one, he doesn't sugarcoat things. So he tells you like it is. He gives you the absolute lowdown of what you need to know. Some people might consider that like, oh, it's so cynical to say things like, you know, it's really hard to get published, or, you know, most stories aren't high concept enough, or most stories aren't interesting enough. But the reason I like that is because it takes the blinders off. It really gets you to a place where you see, like, this is what it really takes to be successful. Like, it takes mastering craft. It takes knowing how to put a story together. And it takes that really looking at things from a pro writer perspective and saying, if I want to get published, I have to do things in a way that I probably haven't done them previously, especially if you're going traditional publishing. Now, if you're self-publishing, maybe not as much. But I would still say traditional self-publishing is the most important thing you could do for your writing career. But that's sort of a different topic. But that's my favorite thing about him. If he doesn't sugarcoat stuff, he tells it like it is, but then he says it in a way that just makes it make sense. And maybe not for everybody, but for me, it was just that thing that changed everything. And I learned story structure from him, which up until that point in 2009 when I found him, I had never heard of story structure. I'd never seen anyone talk about it the way he did. And I never understood why my stories never worked until I learned about structure from him. And suddenly it was like, oh, this is why none of my stories have worked. This is why, you know, I keep feeling like there's something missing. Well, because there was. So now I made it a mission to teach structure and to really teach writers craft, because that is the thing that really will make the difference between a book that sells and a book that sits there. And so that's really the biggest thing I take away from his stuff, is just master craft and be a pro. I mean, a pro would not just sit down and start writing and think that they've got a story. Like, a pro would know craft, would study story, and would practice a lot, and then write their story. So I like to just think of it as, if you want to be a pro writer, that's the way to do it. Mastercraft, and I think if you're going to mastercraft, he's the best person to learn it from.
So you mentioned that you had always wanted to be a writer. Had you written when you were young? And
yep, that's probably most people's story, right? So we all start off. I always say I've been writing since I was old enough to hold a pencil, because pretty much my whole life I've been writing stuff. When I was a kid, I used to write stories. I definitely would say they were, they were okay. They actually, when I look back at something I wrote years and years and years before I even started my official novel writing journey, it had structure. I couldn't have explained to you that it had structure, and I couldn't have explained how I did it. It was more just like, I read a bunch of books. I sort of knew how to do a story, and I put it together, but I couldn't explain it. And that, I think, is the biggest problem, especially for writers who do have a little bit of that intuitive story sense, is like, they can put the story together, but then they can't explain to you how they did it. And that is actually bad, only because if you can't explain how you did something, it's going to be hard to replicate it. So a lot of times, you don't know how you got there. Like, how did I get there? So for me, knowing craft and learning craft is that thing that really helped me to take my writing to a whole new level. Because now, not only can I explain what it needs to have in order to be a good story, but now I know how to use it and have my story be, you know, exactly how a professional story would be, because I like to self-publish. So for me, it's super important that I took that time to really learn craft and to become a better writer because of that.
Well, I think that, as I said, it will be a fun event for writers to take part. There's no cost involved in taking part in this event, right?
Totally free.
Totally free. Okay, so day one, well, today is day two of Story Engineering by Larry Brooks. It's a read and discuss event hosted by Jennifer Blanchard on her webpage. And I think that, Jennifer, you're doing a great service here in bringing Larry's book to people's attention, because his advice is good. And I always liked his advice about revisions, because he's always very clear that you have to spend maybe more time with your revisions than you do with your writing. And so it's fun to work with you like this on a day-to-day basis, right in a row, starting today. Everybody can start today and go right through the 9th. And as you said, at the end, you're going to have a discussion with Larry himself, which is great.
Yeah, so it's giving a lot of fun. He's a great person to talk to. And he's always a great interview, so I love doing live calls with him.
Well, I want to thank you for joining me today, and I want to mention again to everybody that you have quite a few books out. Mention some of the other ones so that we can...
Sure, yeah. So I've got The Pro Writer Mindset. I have Align Your Writing Habits to Success. I have The 15-Minute Writer. And the recent one I just published in December is Journal Your Writing Dreams to Life.
Okay. Well, Jennifer Blanchard, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. And I suggest to all of my listeners, join Jennifer today at 1:00 on her Facebook page. And meanwhile, Larry's book is available on Amazon, so you can get it and start reading it right away if you don't already have it. And Jennifer, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Okay. Take care now. Have fun this afternoon. I'll be on Facebook too. I'll be following you. Okay.
Awesome.
Okay. Great. Thanks again. Bye for now.
Bye.
Okay. Well, we're going to take a commercial break, and when we come back, I have Laura Joyce Moriarty sitting here next to me, and we're going to talk about her great book. And we'll be back in a few minutes.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Looking for a good book? Then get over to Miami Avenue Book Nook in Indian Rocks Beach. Check out the latest books from local authors like Angela Hunt, who wrote the book for the film Risen, or Bonsu Brenvik, whose books preserve the memories of the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel. What do you enjoy reading? A thriller? A romance? How about a mystery or a sci-fi? At the Book Nook, you'll find it all. Remember, one of the joys of life is to read. Located in Indian Rocks Beach, look for the blue building with the mermaid on the side on the corner of Miami Avenue and 2nd Street, two blocks south of the post office. Open Tuesday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Saturday, noon to 4. And don't forget, while you're there, check out Miami Avenue's great collection of Florida wines, local art, and fantastic gifts. Miami Avenue Book Nook, where you will be inspired to read.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with Laura Joyce Moriarty. I have to pronounce it correctly. Moriarty. Hi, Laura.
Hi. How are you, Patsy? Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's fun. As I was telling my listeners earlier, I was up late into the night, and my husband kept saying, "What are you doing? Why are you reading so late in the night?" And I said, "Because I'm having Laura on tomorrow, and I'm reading her book." And it was so good, The Irish Suspect, and it's a Dan Delaney mystery.
Correct.
Fantastic. I love this book. It is really good.
Thank you.
I had been planning to read your book and have you closer on because of the Irish nature of the stories. I was going to have you on closer to in March, closer to St. Patrick's Day. But it was very kind of you to come in and fill in today for somebody who couldn't make it. And so I'm just so thrilled that I have you here, but I had to read your book quickly. And I started yesterday and I said, well, you know, I read very fast anyway, but, you know, I had so many things to do. And then I started reading and I said, oh, I can't stop. This is so good. And I was really, really impressed.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Beautiful character development.
Thank you.
And excellent writing. Really, the entire, it reminded me, actually, as I'm reading, I often think of other writers who, you know, the writing reminds me of. And it actually reminded me of the writing of Jojo Moyes. Now, Jojo Moyes, of course, is a best-selling author in England. And they did that fantastic film based on one of her books, Before Me and then After Me. And, you know, she has this very solid kind of writing, very clear, descriptive, and great dialogue. And you do that.
That's so interesting because one of my books, not the one you read, but it's called The Irish Child. And a lot of people that have bought my book also bought several Jojo Moyes books.
It's strange. You know, I had not expected it, but when I'm reading, I was like 30 pages in, and I said, this reminds me of somebody really great. And I said, Jojo Moyes, wow, now that's a nice comparison.
Thank you.
Because, of course, we all know that Jojo Moyes has now sold a couple million books, and so we hope that maybe you'll follow in the footsteps, huh?
Right. She's been writing a long time, and I've just, you know, have to catch up with some of these long-term writers.
You're doing a good job. Now, this one, the one I read, is called The Irish Suspect, and it introduces your detective, which, and the funny thing is, your detective comes late into the story.
Correct.
You know, so often they bring the detective right there, and you start off with the detective, but you build up this story. It's really well done. Rarely does a book catch me that I don't know the ending before I get to the ending. You know, when it's a suspense book, a mystery book, I almost always guess it. Yeah. And so I was so thrilled, actually, that that I didn't get it with you. I was just holding on up until the end. I think I finished at 2:30 in the morning.
Oh, my
And
goodness.
I said, okay. Oh, that was a good ending. I said, oh, I like that. and your characters. Tell us a little bit about. Now, of course, this is your American. Where were you born?
I was born actually in Louisville, Kentucky, during the war.
Wow. And how did you get involved in writing Irish characters?
Well, my family was Irish. Most of the character names in all of my books come from my family. So we have, for example, in my trilogy, the O'Malleys are the main characters, and that was my mother's maiden name was O'Malley. And so we have the Ferrises and the Delaneys and all of these different names in my family. And I just like picking them out and using their names, but they're not my archetypes. My archetypes are a little different. So for Dan Delaney, my archetype is Brian Dennehy,
uh-huh.
who has always been to me a really interesting actor who, you know, he's played the kind of smooth gentleman. He's played the ferocious fighter, the detective himself, the policeman.
The tough guy.
He's always been very attractive to women. And, I mean, I remember reading that Sandra Bullock. She says, well, I have to admit that I just really like Dan. I think he's cute. Brian Dennehy is so cute. And so he was in my mind when I wrote this series, the Dan Delaney Mysteries. And then there's another character also that's very popular, Irish character, of course, Tom Selleck, who plays in Blue Bloods. And he's the commissioner in this Dan Delaney series. So he's a different kind of tough guy. He has a terrible childhood. He's, you know, a mean guy. And so those two are my favorite characters I developed into these stories.
Now, the story revolves around, well, the entire story revolves around two women that you introduced right at the beginning. And the fantastic thing is you make them so compelling, such interesting women, and each with their own strengths.
Right.
And you just build it up from there.
Right. They're part of, there's little clues on the murders in the very beginning of the story with the two women and their discussion. So you have just little clues you can pick up on where the mystery is going to go. Now, the main character, the tragic character, you might say, his name is Brian Derry. And I said to myself, when I drove down Brian Derry Road when I moved here, I thought, boy, that is the neatest name. I have to do a book about Brian Derry. And sure enough, he turned out to be a great character in the first book, The Irish Suspect. So he was the Irish suspect, Brian Derry.
That's cute how we come out. I love how we come out with these ideas. That's a wonderful thing about being a writer. You can be anywhere doing anything, and suddenly you see something, and it just catches you, and you think, oh, I can make a story just out of the name, or just out of the it conjures up something in you.
Right.
And I love these sort of strings that people get, you know, from
their family, yeah. From their history, their experiences. You know, there's what I call threads throughout all the books with certain characters, and in all my books I have similar family. I have a basic family history starting out with the first book, but then you'll find the characters will be picked up in the different books, and you'll know who they are if you've read the very first one. You'll know who all the other characters are, and so and then they each have their own more or less moral compass that they go by. And so in the book you read, Dan Delaney, he has that moral compass of providing a service and finding out what was the right thing. And, you know, he's a merciful character, but he believes in justice. He doesn't want the wrong person to be convicted. So he sticks with it, even though he's not being paid for extra time or being honored in any way for extra time. He sticks with his story till he gets to the right ending. And so most of my characters have something that you can define as a moral compass that they stick to throughout the books.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned to me is that when you were studying, you studied for a while, you took some a course or graduated from the University College in Oxford?
I went to the University College in Oxford for a semester, and I met Seamus Heaney, who's won the Pulitzer Prize, but that was 20 years ago, so it was long. He died recently, but it was long before he won the Pulitzer Prize, and he was he read poetry to a group of us from school under the trees at Stinsford Church. I mean, he was just a really interesting man, but he was very inspiring, as a lot of university literature professors are. They're very inspiring, and I really appreciated what the previous speaker spoke to on learning about different character development or structures within your book, because those are things you learn from the professors just by the way they teach you sometimes. And I loved meeting with all of them, and so eventually I ended up writing a scholarly journal for professors, which won a lot of awards, and but it was on information technology because that was the subject of the time. So it was, you know, a professor going to the Serengeti and taking his technology for the first time, or someone who is doing a heart transplant using technology that was new. So I developed a sort of skill that was from that level, and I try to keep a little more formal level of writing in my books and keep that what I've learned over the years when I was working with the professors.
Now, of course, it's wonderful to be in Oxford.
It was amazing.
Isn't that inspiring?
It was very inspiring.
It is so beautiful, and if anyone can do a semester there or one of their summer programs, it's just an inspiring place to be.
It absolutely is. We went to Magdalen College and walked the halls where Oscar Wilde walked the halls, and it was just great fun, as well as being extremely informative. And they have a great respect for education in these schools that sometimes I didn't notice so much in our colleges, and I've been to about at least a dozen, but they have a great respect for the student. And they themselves will teach for a while, but then they have to become a student to remain as a professor, because then they understand how to teach.
Well, it is true. The education is something, I'm not sure anymore. Anywhere, the education in some of these schools is so strange nowadays. But I lived in England for quite a few years, and I'm not far from Oxford. And so I just know that thrill of being able to be there, and that atmosphere that you just permeates you when you're there.
Right.
Of people who actually used to learn and study and real subjects. Now we're a little bit, I think some of our colleges are going off on tangents a little bit, because it is so important to learn actually how to write and how to read well. Because that's one of the beautiful things about particularly about British universities, is the reading. You were assigned reading, and you had to be able to talk about the reading.
Right.
You had to be able to talk about what you had read. And more and more I realize that one of the things that all of us have to do, and particularly writers, we have to work more now on getting readers. You know, it's fine to write, and it's fun to write, but we need those readers out there, and I'm so happy with the younger generation of writers who are going to some of the new methodologies like Wattpad and some of the other ways to reach young readers, and to get them while they're young. And I think we really owe J.K. Rowling a big, big thank you, because she did bring so many young people who are now millennials into reading,
right?
Because if they could read a Harry Potter book, a big Harry Potter book, they can read anything,
right?
And I want to work more and more with finding ways to reach the readers.
Correct. Yeah, that's what I was when I was young. Now I didn't start writing when I was young. I started as a reader, and I would go to the library during the summertime, and I would look for the biggest books I could find. I had my finger, and I'd go along like this until I got to one that was
the big book.
The big book. And I loved big books. So my first three books were very big books. And people said to me, why did you write such big books? And I said, I just love big books.
I know.
That's the way I grew up. I had to have the Jane Eyre books and the you know, Ben-Gurion books and all of the big ones, Hawaii and Centennial.
Oh, I loved Hawaii because it was so big. I remember big. When I got that, I thought, oh, it's big. It's
yes,
big. I love it.
I just loved it. And I would get into a chaise lounge in the backyard and I would read for hours, just sitting out there reading. And I didn't consider myself a writer until I was in college, and then, you know, the way the professors talked to me about my writing. But then I didn't write something like a book. I started out by people coming to me, would you write my resume? Would you write my political speech? Would you write? Everybody wanted me to write their annual report. Everybody wanted me to write something because I could write. But I didn't really enjoy it until I got to writing for the journal. And then I found that you could take something that was happening with technology or with one of the courses on religion, and you could turn it into a story. And that is what made my journal very popular. And so then when I finally retired from Emory, I had a friend call and said, why aren't you writing? You know, I was teaching at the time, and I said, well, I don't know. What should I write? She said, just write a book, which was an odd thing to say. But I sat down and I wrote a book, and it took 4 months to write this huge book. But as we said earlier on with your other speaker, it took months and months of editing and re-editing and going through it and making corrections. And that's the hard part of writing, is it's a job and you have to work at it.
And of course now, in addition to your own writing and your own editing of your books, you're doing that for other people too?
I am doing some publishing, yes, for other people. I've done several this year. I just started, really. And again, I try to convince the people when they want, they could spend a long time writing, but they have to really do a lot of work at it. It's not something that just for most people comes out naturally. You do have to look at your construction. You do have to look at your paragraphs and see if you have three or four different sentences going on in the same, you know, with different ideas in the same paragraph. I mean, there are just some things that you need to learn. And so since I had so much experience in publishing and I knew how to use the software and I knew how to use the writing and I'd already done my own books, I realized from talking to some friends that people were getting some rather extraordinary prices quoted to them to publish their books. And I thought that that was probably not fair. So I helped them out at a much reduced rate from what most.
I will say about your books, and they are beautifully done. I see so many books I get from major publishers and from independents, and your books are very well laid out. I mean, the interior layout and design is perfect because it is not easy to make a book that's readable. And so many books are just, and particularly so many independent books, although I have discovered this even recently with some really big publishers, the books are too tight. The spacing's too tight. It's they're not comfortable to read. And you have done a beautiful job on your books.
Thank you so much, yeah. That was one of the things I learned at Emory, doing that work. You get critiqued a lot when you are in a situation where you have a vast audience, even international audience. And so I learned design. I learned how to lay out pages so that they could be read easily.
Yeah, and you do. You really do. I think it's probably for an independent author the best layout I've seen.
Oh, thank you.
I just have to compliment you on that, and it's a fine example for anybody who is doing their, you know, self-publishing to get one of the not the Kindle version. You have to get the printed version, because when you see the printed version and how beautifully Laura is doing this, it's really the word that came to mind, of course, is classy. They look classy.
Thank you.
And that's a nice compliment.
Thank you so much.
So, it's nice. They're not thin books either. So you feel that you're getting substance here, and your writing is what I think the compliment I always give to people that really means the most is it's solid. It's so solid. And just next week I'm going to have Amor Towles on. Now, Amor Towles wrote A Gentleman in Moscow. Well, that's like the most solid, it's like, to me, Tolstoy, you know, this is writing. And so next week, I'm very excited to have Amor Towles on. He's going to be talking. He was on once before. I didn't have enough time to talk to him about everything that I wanted to go over with him about his marvelous book, A Gentleman in Moscow. Now, that's a very, talking about a big book, as a matter of fact, it's a very long book, too. And I was so sad. I could have been another, I didn't want to put it down. As I said, I love long books like you do. And so when I was reading it, it was divided actually in book one and book two, sort of. And when I got to book one, I thought, oh my goodness, what if somebody had said, that's enough? And he hadn't continued. But it's a wonderful book. So, and the exciting thing is that I'm going to have the narrator on, the gentleman who actually narrated it, and it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful time next Tuesday. Now, are your books an Audible version yet?
No, but if you have a Kindle Fire, you can listen to them.
Yeah.
They haven't been Irish accent would be a lot to.
Oh well, there are some fine narrators out there,
right.
And once you get to that point, it is fun, and I have found recently that, well, actually, it's because of A Gentleman in Moscow. I was not, I'm a purist. I'm like you. I like the big, thick book, and I like the book in my hand, and I want to sit out in the backyard and read it. And I wasn't that crazy about Audible books. They're nice. They have their uses. Until I listened to A Gentleman in Moscow, which is narrated by Nicholas Guy Smith. Now, this narration is so perfect. It's so fantastic that I can tell people honestly, you could get the Audible book first, and then you could get the written book, because it's just, you want both. You need to have both, because I was so thrilled when I contacted Nicholas Smith, and he wrote back to me and he sent me an email. He said, oh, I'd love to come on and talk about how much fun I had narrating Amor's book. And so it's just a fantastic lesson for me to appreciate Audible books more than I have in the past. So I think actually your books would do very well as Audible books.
Thank you. I think they would,
because they have a nice flow. They have a nice, you have this nice dialogue, very very good dialogue, and lovely description. So it's the next level.
It's the next level, exactly.
We keep going up and trying to find ways to reach more readers, and there are so many people, of course, who do like Audible books. So it's, and you know, to have an Audible book, whether it's the wonderful thing about Audible books, before when you used to have to listen, to books on and with a CD or something, that was too much of a trouble for me. But when you can just click it on your phone and play it, it's nice to be able to avoid, just avoid everything else. Turn off the television for a while and listen to some nice words coming out with a nice accent. And
the accents are important, but I still will listen to a lot of books on the Kindle, and especially in the car. And they don't sound quite as good as the Audible book, but once you are into the story for the first page or two, it just will flow pretty much the same way. And I love to listen. I have bunches of books on my Kindle. I'll take them into the kitchen and listen to it play for a little bit, and then if I get in the car and I'll listen, especially for a road trip for 45 minutes or something. Uh-huh. They're just stupendous to listen to. And then you can pick it back up and read and where you left off.
Okay, now we have three in this
series so far. Yes.
Three so far.
In this series, right. The Dan Delaney Mysteries, yeah.
And they are, the first one, of course, is The Irish Suspect, which kept me up all night. And then we go to The Dirty Dubliner, and then The American Murders, which now, the time period, tell us a little, I forgot to mention the time period that they take place in.
These are late 50s, early 60s. I think I start out in 1957. It's after the war, so uh-huh. when he's the detective in Dublin. And he's an American from New Jersey. It starts out, you know, you yeah. find out that he's an American. But he, when he was in World War II, he did a tour of duty and stayed in Europe. And he loved Dublin. And he had Irish roots, too. And so that's when he becomes the detective. So the first one is in Dublin. The second one stays in Dublin. The third book is called The American Murders because he has a friend from the war who calls him over to help solve a couple of double murders. And one is taking place in Cleveland, which I love doing since that's where I grew up, in Cleveland, Ohio. And then the second murders are in St. Pete. And that was from a request by my son to write something about Cigar City Mafia, which I didn't know enough about to write a whole book. But I did bring in some of that history, the Al Capone history from St. Petersburg. And so when Dan Delaney is there, you're probably, let's see, I'm thinking maybe 25, 30 years after Al Capone. But the group of his family members, you know, there's different family members still alive since he had built some houses there. And so his crimes are more or less carried down, like a legacy, carried down through the generations, but a little more secretive in my book. And so he uncovers quite a few interesting murders in St. Petersburg.
Well, that's always fun to be able to place the events in the places where you lived or the places that you've traveled. So that's right. That's wonderful. Well, I think you've just done a fantastic job, Laura, and I hope that are your books available at the Book Nook in Indiana?
Yes, they're available at the Book Nook.
Okay. Yes. Well, I suggest everyone just have go drop in at Miami Avenue Wine Bar Music and the Arts anytime, and we have the Book Nook there, and we have a lot of wonderful, wonderful authors. Laura is one of them, Gino Bardi, Rita Moreau, Carol Perry, Angela Hunt, and so many of our local authors are showcased there, and it's a wonderful opportunity for you to pick up one of their books and to just jump into this book, these books, because they are lots of fun, and you've done a terrific job. And that reminds me of Angela Hunt. Angela Hunt, of course, has her workshop in February. You still have time to jump in and sign up. Just go to angelahuntbooks.com, and all the information is there. It's going to be a two-day workshop that will take place at the Holiday Inn there in Indian Rocks Beach. And you will get, I don't know, she has workbooks, she has all sorts of giveaways for you, including lunch and snacks, and it is a wonderful opportunity to meet other writers. She has people coming from all over the country, and Angela, of course, is the author of Risen, the novelization of the movie, the hit movie, and, of course, all of her beautiful deadly and mysterious beauties from the Bible series, and you really should sign up for this if you can. It's going to be lots of fun, and that's going to be taking place in February. And I just again want to remind everybody that on Tuesday I'm really excited to have Amor Tolles. I also have Margaret Maron coming on the 17th. She is a mystery writer of America Grandmaster, and at the same time, on the same day, I have Carol J. Perry, our own absolutely fantastic mystery writer of Cozy Mysteries. And she's going to have a new book coming out in the beginning of February. So I'm hoping that everyone will go and pre-order her book on Amazon. I want to remind all of you again that pre-ordering a book on Amazon is really, really helpful to a writer. So whenever you know that a writer is coming out with a new book, if you can go and pre-order it, you know, one of the things we talked here to Jennifer Blanchard, and she mentioned that she, I wanted to say two things about her before I finish too. She's an Amazon best-selling author in certain categories, and in the category where Carol's going to be in Cozy Mysteries, if you pre-order it, it really helps. It really gets on this Amazon algorithm if an author is noticed and makes pre-sales. Now, somebody like Mary Higgins Clark sells, like, has 50,000 pre-ordered books, maybe 100,000. As a matter of fact, the minute she completes one book, they already have the next book up for people to start pre-ordering a year in advance. Now, Carol hasn't had her book up there that long, but it's up there. And if you can pre-order it, that would be a wonderful, wonderful, just a kind thing to do so that Amazon will start noticing that she's the type of author who's going to get pre-orders. And, of course, then if you can, once you get the book and read it, and her book is fantastic, do a nice review on Amazon, because this is one of the things that really helps writers. Sometimes we don't think about it, that it is important. And I want to mention one thing before I leave, because I don't want anyone to come back and send me emails. Jennifer Blanchard has a very nice website, and she does do coaching on her website, and she has some nice things. But I do want to mention that she uses bad language. That's all I can say. And it's up to you if you are up to, you know, I don't want people going there and say, oh, well, she's a little bit vulgar. For some reason, she's young, and I guess she thinks it's hip. I don't think she needs it. She's a fine writer, and her advice is excellent. But if I just want to warn you, so if you're not hip, and if you're not with it, then, you know, be careful about going to her website. But anyway, I want to thank everybody, and you can go to my website and see all of listen to all of my archive shows. It's www.radio-joyonpaper, and go to the archive page, and you can listen to interviews from all sorts of wonderful famous writers and literary agents and publishers. And join me next Thursday, and I'm going to have a wonderful show on Thursday. So bye for now, and I want to thank Laura again for being in here today. Laura Moriarty, and you can find her books online, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Just use my name, Laura Joyce Moriarty, on Amazon, and all my books will come up.
And all her books will pop up. So go out there and read a wonderful Irish mystery. Bye for now.